Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly. What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule 1 drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's our final hour for the week. This first week of July. Hard for me to believe we're already halfway through the year. Things are looking good for Monday. Monday is the 7-10 holiday. For those of you who don't know, 7-10, July 10th, 7-10. If you write it out, 7-1-0, and you rotate that paper 180 degrees, it will spell the word oil. You know, this is that old calculator trick from back in the 80s where you'd spell words out, turn the calculator upside down, it would spell boob or something. I guess you don't have to turn it upside down for boob, do you? Anyway, 8008. Anyway, 7-10 holiday is taking place on Monday, and High Times Magazine is doing a huge celebration of 7-10 because it also coincides with the 500th edition of High Times Magazine. Issue number 500 is coming out. That's pretty amazing. So Danny Danko and some of the others from High Times will be live streaming on Monday for 500 minutes, and they're going to be doing all sorts of dabs and such. So we will see if we can kind of take a look into what's going on in High Times, if they're still up and around during our regular showtime. Also, having a good time here at Delta 9 House and Studios. House is full again for the weekend. All sorts of great guests from both coasts. We got a guest from Los Angeles and guests from, I think, New Jersey staying in us in here this week. So lots of fun. We are almost completely booked for July. There's one next weekend is open in Sativa Room, and the last week is open in Indica Room. Check them all out at delta9house.com if you're interested in staying here. You can also watch me do this show right here from Delta 9 House and Studios. We have a lot of fun. We're going to talk about the rest of the news that's going on in the world. We'll get to some politics as well. Donald Trump is out there embarrassing the hell out of the country again, and recently spoke with Vladimir Putin. His boss, right? So he recently spoke to Putin, and I guess the latest thing coming out of this, and I need to follow up and find out in more detail what's going on, but apparently we're going to set up some sort of commission, council, study, whatever, group on cyber hacking and electoral security. Okay, good so far, right? But from what I'm getting from my Twitter feed, it's apparently going to be set up in conjunction with the Russians. We're going to work together, us and Russia, on our election hacking. Really, this is like the news these days. It's so hard to even satirize. Like, I think the people at The Onion and must be going crazy. Like, how do you write something that's crazier than that? All of the U.S. intelligence agencies say Russia had a hand in meddling and hacking in our election. So to fix the problem, we're going to bring Russia in to help? I mean, it's just the naked, traitorous, treasonous nature of what's going on in the Oval Office these days. So blatant. I mean, think about what was scandalous prior to Trump. Think about, remember when, Al Gore sighed during a debate, and that was, oh my God, such disrespect, he sighed during a debate, oh no. Watergate, I mean, my generation, I'm almost 50, right? So, like, Watergate in my lifetime is the biggest political scandal ever, or maybe Iran-Contra, right? But definitely Watergate, because at least in Watergate, some people went to jail. But in Watergate, the scandal, the big problem, was the attempted cover-up of a break-in at the Democratic headquarters. We're talking about Russia breaking into our electronic headquarters of the Democratic Party, right? The Republicans try to cover up one badly executed burglary, and that's enough to topple the president. He's out, right? He's resigning in disgrace. These days, you got our biggest enemy. Not a generation ago, the president was calling them an evil empire. All of our intelligence agencies say they're hacking into it, which I think a lot of people, they don't understand the nature of cyberspace, and that what has happened is akin to a land invasion. Like, we've got Soviet troops. Like, this is Red Dawn, right? Again, going back to my teenage years, 1984, this is Red Dawn. This is the Soviet invasion of America, except now it's Russians, and it's in cyberspace. And since it's not real, it's not tanks coming down the square, and it's not Russian soldiers marching in the streets, people don't feel it like it's an invasion. But it is. We're engaged in a war right now. Cyber war. And we're going to have them help us. Oh, my God. Good thing I got lots of really good weed in Oregon. We're going to be right back. Got to pay some bills. Make sure you stay tuned.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com. City of Portland permit number 17-159855.
Did you know that each day in the state of Georgia, more than 6 people are diagnosed with HIV? As a person providing life-saving services to those most at risk, I know HIV is preventable. We need more people in this fight, which is why I want you to join me this October in Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the Alcohol Agenda. Lot safer.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the voice of the industry from the National Cannabis Industry Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back. Continuing on the politics tip, interesting poll coming out from YouGov that was reported in Newsweek. The headline reads that Democrats want a socialist to lead their party more than a capitalist. Interesting, right? And, you know, this comes on the heels of something else I was watching earlier, which was a Jake Tapper interview with Bill Maher on CNN. And he was asking Maher about, you know, what should the Democrats do? And this is something that Dan Savage talked about recently on Bill Maher's show as well. And it's something I've focused in on a lot because I'm a student of George Lakoff, and I believe in, you know, framing and messaging dynamics. And that's one way in which the Republicans have kicked our ass for years and years, and that is on framing and messaging. And I believe part of it is because Republicans are the money party. They're the party of business and capitalism and Madison Avenue, right? And no neurolinguist has done a better job of trying to motivate people to do certain things and feel certain ways than the non-neurolinguistically trained people on Madison Avenue. Marketers, advertisers. There's a whole science behind getting people to want to buy this flavor of ice cream or that scent of perfume or this particular brand of clothes. And they take that same kind of idea and they use it with their party and their platform and their political candidates. They're not policy people. It's not about governing. It never is. You'll see whenever we get Republican administrations, the economy goes to hell. We end up in wars. Terrible things happen, right? The social safety net gets decimated. The rich get richer. You know, trickle on economics goes on. Hatred rises. We don't like the minorities and the immigrants and the gay people or whatever, right? That always comes around with Republicans because they're not about governing. They're not about policy. They're about business. And in order to conduct business and to make business better for business by taking the levers of government and controlling those and the regulatory agencies and making sure they don't interfere too much on making a profit, in order to do that, they have to win elections. So they figured out how to win elections because it's like marketing. It's like we figured out how to get people to buy a certain brand of frozen pizza. We'll figure out how to get people to buy this particular candidate. And they're good at it because they understand that people are like them. They don't vote based on policy necessarily. They vote based on identity, based on tribalism, based on their feelings, on who tells the best story. So Democrats keep coming back with, well, if we just, you know, show this policy and how to be. Think about, like, you know, Dan Savage, when he was writing his column, had a part in it about how on the Bill Maher show, he had said how Democrats' big mistake is they keep calling Social Security and Medicare entitlements. Well, what's the framing of entitled? When you hear the word entitled, do you think of yourself or do you think of some snooty, rich, effete, pinky finger in the air, born with a silver spoon in his mouth, think he deserves everything kind of person? That's what, those are the kind of things that the frame entitled brings up. And Democrats keep calling it that, entitlements. Call them what they are, earned benefits. You paid into this. You paid into Medicare. You paid into Social Security. You paid into unemployment insurance through deductions on your paycheck. You paid into it. You invested. You earned those benefits. And those bastards are taking them away from you. That's the way Democrats need to talk. And so there's other examples of this. The Dan Savage piece goes on to talk about the one that he had forgotten to talk about. Let's see if I can bring that up in the old Wayback Machine here. Nope, not there. All right, so I just forgotten what the other example was, but entitlements is one example of Democrats just blowing the framing. And this latest story on Newsweek has got me very interested because Nancy Pelosi's under attack again. She's head of the Democratic Party again. And the Republicans are saying, you know, they're going to keep using attacks on Nancy Pelosi, tie Nancy Pelosi to whoever's running in the 2018 midterms, and she brings them down. She's an anchor that brings them down in people's minds. Now, whether that's true or not, we don't know, but that's their plan. They think it's a successful plan, and considering that they've won the most elections over the past 10 years, it appears to be a successful plan. And the way they do it, according to their little memo, is we'll be highlighting Nancy Pelosi's toxic agenda and reminding voters around the country that Democratic candidates are nothing more than rubber stamps for her out-of-touch liberal policies. So this is, you know, again, paint the Democrats as being out of touch. You're not one of us. You're not with us. You're there. You're San Francisco. You're other. You're different. Republicans, we're America. We're you. Right? That's what this really gets down to when you get to the framing of it. So should Pelosi go? Well, 41% of Democrats say no. 27% said she should be replaced. But then if she goes, if Nancy Pelosi is forced out, who do you want replacing her? When they asked about a hypothetical replacement, Democrats opted for socialists. 35% said it's somewhat or very important the replacement be a socialist, while 31% felt the same for a capitalist. Since Bernie Sanders launched his presidential campaign, the number of activists in the Democratic Socialists of America has doubled to 19,000. Socialism used to be a dirty word. We were just talking about evil empire and Soviet Union, and socialist was supposed to be communist, was supposed to be evil. That's falling away too, especially among young people. 43% of people under 30 years old have a favorable view of socialism. Just 32% of that same age group has a favorable view of capitalism. Younger people are beginning to understand this. Bill Maher said this too. He made his advice for Democrats was go to where the energy in the party is. Hillary Clinton couldn't fill up the banquet room in an Olive Garden, Bill Maher said. But here's Bernie Sanders, a 74-year-old Democratic socialist, pulling rock star crowds, people standing in four-mile lines to get in. Go where the energy is. And clearly, people understand the system's broken. That was a large part of Trump's appeal. A lot of people said, you know, screw it. America is all messed up. It doesn't matter who we put in. Let's put in someone who will shake things up who's not one of the regular insiders. Of course, they were fooled again because Republicans aren't about policy. They're about winning elections. This was just about painting Donald Trump as something he's not. 3 years ago, those same voters would have called him one of those elite, out-of-touch Manhattan liberals. But again, it was just about winning elections so they can once again decimate the social safety net, give more tax breaks to rich people. But the younger people, the energy, the next leaders of the Democratic Party have a more favorable view of socialism, which is interesting given that the Republicans say they want to attack by painting Nancy Pelosi as an out-of-touch San Francisco liberal. Here's where the Democrats need to make the change, is they need to get to where, like Maher says, get to where the energy of the party is and understand how to frame the capitalism we have now is not the capitalism America's all about. That what we have now is crony capitalism. What we have now is capitalism run amok. Here's a perfect example of Nancy Pelosi being a lousy messenger. This is the last two paragraphs of the Newsweek piece. Pelosi, meanwhile, made her views on socialism clear in February. A student at a town hall asked her about the Democratic Party, perhaps moving more to the left on economic issues. Quote, I thank you for your question, but I have to say, we're capitalist, and that's just the way it is. End quote, Pelosi said. And the Republican Party thanks you because by saying, we're capitalist, and that's just the way it is. We're capitalist, period. We're capitalist. The way Republicans run the world, the way they see the world, is correct, and our ideas on the left are not. That's what she said in that little tiny short sentence, we're capitalist, and that's just the way it is, automatically set a frame where any sort of leftward thinking, social democracy thinking, is automatically off the table. And that's just abhorrent. I want a Democratic leader who understands how to say capitalism is off the rails. It's run amok. Capitalism is like fire. When it's harnessed properly, its power is unbelievable. When it's left to run amok, everyone suffers. Government is the only thing that can put the brakes on runaway capitalism. Government is the only thing that can level the playing field. Government is the only thing that can hold the powerful to account. We need to start painting the capitalism as it is now, as the robber barons have taken control. The greedy banksters and capitalists are robbing the treasury. Of course, Nancy Pelosi and the older Democratic Party and the centrists among them can't do that because they'd be biting the hand that feeds them. That tech side, that Wall Street side of capitalism, that likes it just fine the way it is. Thank you. We like getting our H-1B visa people in. We like sending stuff out of the country to be manufactured cheaply so Amazon can distribute it and make a whole bunch of money. We like those kind of things. So, can there be a revolt from within the Democratic Party? Can a Bernie Sanders or a Bernie Sanders-led coalition move forward in 2018 and 2020 and wrest the Democratic Party from the control of the DNC centrists, the Mark Penns and these guys that keep offering the same lame advice. Let's just be nicer, lighter Republicans, and that's what'll win for us. And they were fooled by two incredibly gifted politicians in Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Fooled because these guys had the charisma and ability to overcome the Democratic Party losing ways. Our chat room. John Thomas just comes up and says, I got a letter from Dianne Feinstein responding she doesn't support marijuana legalization. There you go, 83-year-old senators. Way to be on the 21st Amendment tip on the West Coast. Happy 420, everyone.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Did you know that in the U.S., black women have the highest HIV infection rates of all women? As a public health professional, I know we can do better. Every day, I work to close the gap in health inequities, but I'm just one person. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
This is high purity THC content marijuana, and it's not a healthy substance.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, from the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Shanna, y'all have their David.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We're talking about politics and can the Democratic Party actually win anything anymore? 2018 coming up. Part of this was based on four stickers that had come across from the Democratic Party. They were basically trying to float some ideas about, what would be the theme of the Democratic Party, right? A couple of them were like, "She persisted, we resisted, Democrats 2018. Or, "We resist, Democrats 2018. But one of the taglines was, "Democrats 2018. I mean, have you seen the other guys?" Seriously, they floated that as a potential campaign slogan for taking back the House in 2018. "Democrats, I mean, have you seen the other guys?" Yeah, that worked real well for Hillary Clinton, didn't it? Remember her whole campaign 2016? "Oh, Donald Trump's a bad man who says bad things. Can you imagine having to explain to our children how the bad man said the bad things?" And I'm sure a whole lot of people in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan at that point saw that commercial and said, "Yeah, I'll have plenty of time to tell my kid about who said bad things because I'm unemployed. I'm sitting at home and I got no job prospects. But yeah, I'm real worried about the bad man who might say bad things. Hell, if he gets my job back, he can say fuck on the air for all I care." That's what a lot of people thought in that 2016 election. Democrats need to stop being... Democrats have been gun-shy. Well, that's maybe not the best term. Democrats have been so trepidatious about the word liberal, the idea of progressivism, being painted as socialists. It's like a post-traumatic stress we've got from getting our ass kicked since the late 70s, let's say, since Jimmy Carter. And so what Democrats have done
is they didn't stick with what brung them, right? Like that old saying, stick to what dance with them that brung you, right? When you talk about in football, for example, if you're a running team, well, and you get in the playoffs, keep running. And even if the running isn't going so well this game or this quarter or this series, you keep running because that's what got you there. That's what you do. That's who you are. That's what people know you as. And that's the same thing. I mean, Democrats lost some elections in 1980, 1984, and 1988. You know, lost this three elections in a row to Ronald Reagan, which, again, like Bill Clinton, like Barack Obama, an unbelievably gifted politician. Not a gifted policymaker, but an amazing politician, amazing human being who could connect with people, had a lot of charisma, was the great communicator, right? So Democrats get their asses kicked in 80 and 84 and 88, and they start to think that, well, it's because America's moved to the right, and America's much more, America doesn't like liberalism anymore. America doesn't like progressivism anymore. And to be fair, there was some of that. There was some of that malaise in the 1970s. There was some of that disdain for welfare and what was going on. But those are things that could have been fixed. Just the problem wasn't the concept itself. It was some of the details around it. As you know, policy is a difficult and complex thing to deal with. But Democrats get their asses kicked through the 1980s. They decide, oh, it's because we're not rightward enough. We're not centrist enough. We're way too left. We're way too liberal. And ever since Bill Clinton won in 1992, by being basically Republican light, by being Mr. Tough on Crime, Mr. Three Strikes and You're Out, Mr. Let's Open Up Trade Through NAFTA, Mr. Let's Give, you know, the telecommunications companies the ability to merge if they want to, let's just let business run wild. Basically the best Republican president we've ever had. And that convinced him. It's like, oh, we lost three in a row. And then, you know, we nominated Jimmy Carter, who was the president. He was liberal. We nominated Mondale. He was a liberal. We nominated Dukakis. He was a liberal. And they all lost. And then we nominated this centrist, business-friendly guy, Bill Clinton. And so, therefore, that must be what we should do. Didn't stick with what brought him. And his reelection in 96, you know, cemented that thought process into a lot of these Dems. That, no, this is the way the things are now. This is the way things are now. You have to have money. We all have to be money party. We're both the money party. Everybody has to be friendly to business. Nobody says the poor anymore. Remember when politicians used to talk about poverty, talk about the poor? No, that's not even in the discussion anymore. Working class is as close as anyone will come to saying poor anymore. Not even in the discussion. So Democrats, they get this string of Bill Clinton in the late 90s being all business friendly. And so, of course, if the opponents have moved to being far more business friendly, the only way for the Republicans to react is to be even more business friendly, even more let's deregulate, even more let's put the Goldman Sachs and all the other CEOs in charge of the agencies that regulate their industries. And then once there's two terms of George W. Bush setting that, then by the time Obama gets in, that's the standard now. That's just the way things run. And he's going to continue to run that way as well. Again, moving more toward the right. And Democrats have completely forgot what their brand is, who they are. Are they a running team? Are they a passing team? What are they? No, they're all we know about Democrats anymore is solidified by what that one little saying was. Democrats 2018. I mean, have you seen the other guys? That's all that has become of the Democratic Party. Is just we're not the assholes. We're not those guys. And that, I'm afraid, is not somebody you want to get behind. That's not somebody you want to fight for and put your money behind. Democrats need to get back to being the party in opposition to business. And not in opposition in that we want to shut business down or keep business from growing, but the party in opposition in that, I guess opposition is probably the wrong word. The umpire, the referee. That's what government needs to be. Again, back to that frame of highlighting how capitalism now is run amok. The game has no rules. There are no referees. There are no umpires. And what few there are work for the team. Like the Dallas Cowboys get to pick their own umpires now. Own referees. That's what needs to be hammered time after time after time. But Democrats can't grasp it. They fail to do it. You want a real slogan for 2018? Democrats, make government work again. Democrats, pass bills for the people again. Point out that the Republicans are not the party of the people. Take that mantle of being the party of the people. And this is where the other failure with the Democrats comes, is that when they do want to be the party of the people, they're the party of the aggrieved minorities. Not, and this is not to say these concerns should be dismissed, but how did the Democratic Party get painted in this last election? As being the party that's for transgender bathrooms and illegal immigrants, undocumented immigrants, I should say. Undocumented immigrants, transgender bathrooms, Black Lives Matter. Got trapped in this being, trying to be, okay, I'm struggling for the metaphor, but one of the metaphors I have here is the difference between a musician and someone who knows some songs. You know a guy who can pick up a guitar and he can play like 8 or 9 songs on the guitar, but that's it. He doesn't know how to play guitar. He's played a few songs on the guitar. So if you're going to put a band together, you're not going to pick that guy. Even though he might play, you know, Born on the Bayou better than any guitar player you've ever heard, he only knows that song. He doesn't actually know how to play guitar, how to play other songs, how to jam, how to all that, right? And you're thinking, where is this metaphor going? Well, the Democratic Party has become that guy who can play a few songs on the guitar. He can play the Black Lives Matter song. He can play the transgender bathroom song. He can play the, right? But he doesn't know how to play music. The Democratic Party doesn't know how to play the people. They can play that group of people and that group of people and those people and that person, but not the people. For many people, Democratic politicians, policies, speeches, issues, focus have felt to them, and I'm not even just saying white people, I'm saying just people in general have gotten the feeling that the Democratic Party doesn't stand for one overarching concern. It seems to stand for these little transactional individual concerns. And for people that don't get addressed in those individual concerns, it feels like it's a party of a whole bunch of separates rather than a party of one together. Even think about the taglines for the two candidates in the last election. Trump's was, make America great again. And I got a ton of problems with that. It's really make America white again. And who says America isn't great now? But make America great again, in the framing of it, is a framing of we. A framing of us. A framing of us being Americans, all being together. What was Hillary's? I'm with her. I, a singular thing, am with her, another singular thing. And if all of us are with her, all of our little singular things and groups are all with her, that one person. And to now, if I'm with her, if the idea was to follow a strong galvanizing, a strong, you know, motivational leader, and we're talking John F. Kennedy or Ronald Reagan or Barack Obama, you might pull that off. A cult of personality around someone who is popular. But Hillary Clinton, by her own estimation, was not popular. So to build the campaign, I'm with her, was just doomed from the beginning. It's time for folks in the Democratic Party to recognize the power of what Bernie Sanders put together in this last election. Against all odds, against all political reasoning, ignited this fire within a lot of us Americans who, and a lot of them who voted for Trump, but a lot of us who feel that we, that government doesn't matter to us. Government is a wholly owned subsidiary of corporate America. And we need somebody, some party that stands for us. That used to be the Democratic Party. Who knows if that can happen again? We shall see. I know I gave about $200 to Bernie Sanders over the campaign cycle. I would do it again. All right, we'll be back right after this.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of The Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. If you're an organization or business looking to promote your brand, we have sponsorship patronage available at mjagenda.com. Sponsorship includes 15 and 30 second ad breaks and 6 minute interviews on the podcast, depending on sponsorship level, which begins at $19.99 a month. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at mjagenda.com.
Did you know that in Georgia, one in 13 adults is in jail or prison or on parole or probation? As a mother and as a professional, I advocate for access to drug treatment instead of incarceration. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Come lend your voice to the fight. Register now at reformconference.org.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Shark Sessions from The Marijuana Show. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barack has sent him a package. Anybody? What is that? Smells like a skunk. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back to this decidedly non-marijuana hour. I'm really into this politics topic today. I mean, we could always say that all political discussions have some sort of marijuana angle in that who we elect has a large degree of responsibility with respect to all sorts of marijuana issues. I mean, if Hillary Clinton had won and Democrats were in charge of various offices, EPA, FinCEN, etc., some of these issues we have with taxes and banking and other federal issues, you know, Schedule One studies, all that kind of stuff, would move along a lot better, a lot easier under Democratic rule. That, I'm sorry, that's just an absolute fact. Even though there's no way, it's one of those, I know it's true, I can't prove it, but I know it's true. We would be a lot better off with Democrats in charge right now on the marijuana issue. That being said, they're not necessarily great themselves, as evidenced by the senior senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, once again putting a fundraising letter or fundraising pitch out, noting that she does not support marijuana legalization. So I don't like to bitch about politics without offering solutions, and I have some solutions. I've talked a lot on this show about ranked choice voting, and now the folks out at fairvote.org have I don't know if this is new, but this is the first I've heard of it, because I've already known about ranked choice voting. Now, ranked choice voting is where in an election you get to pick more than one person. You get to rank them. Like, this is my first choice. This is my second choice. This is my third choice. And so an election that was like, you know, Clinton and Trump and Bernie Sanders, and let's add, you know, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein in there, right? If those five were running, you could vote your conscience. You could say, hey, I'm voting for Bernie Sanders first. He's my first choice. But if I can't have Bernie Sanders, I'll have Jill Stein. If I can't have Jill Stein, I'll have Gary Johnson. If I can't have Gary Johnson, I'll take Hillary Clinton. If I can't have Hillary Clinton, then it's Trump. Right? You could have ranked them that way, theoretically, right? And then the way the voting works is if we count all the votes for everyone's first choice, okay? And if amongst all the first choice votes, nobody gets more than 50%, nobody gets a majority, then we kick out the lowest vote getter. Of all the first choicers, we take the guy who got the lowest amount of votes, in this case, let's say it's Trump, and then you take a look at all the second choices of those Trump voters. Those now become the vote, right? So we throw away all the Trump votes, but their second choice now gets added into the rest of the votes. Who's the second choice? Well, some of the Trump people's second choice was Gary Johnson, so Gary Johnson gets more votes. A few of the Trump people's second choice was Bernie Sanders, so he gets some votes, right? And then we crunch the numbers again. Did anyone get a majority? No. Now we kick off the last person on the ballot. Let's say that Jill Stein was last then. All right, the rest of hers. Who was the second choice there? Well, a lot of them picked Hillary, And basically, you keep doing that until you get to a point where somebody's got the majority of the vote. And the advantage of this ranked choice voting is that you don't worry about a spoiler effect. Like, if you were a Jill Stein voter in this election, you had to worry that, well, especially if you were in a swing state, right? If I vote for Jill Stein, I know she's not going to win, but I can't vote for Hillary Clinton. But if I did vote for Hillary Clinton, at least she'd beat Trump. And Trump, there's all sorts of, you know, thinking that had to go in your head as far as what's the strategic thing to do. In ranked choice voting, you don't have to be strategic. You can just say, I believe in Jill Stein, and just, bam, set your vote there. Knowing that, well, if she doesn't get enough, at least my second choice, the not Donald Trump choice, has a shot at winning. So I already knew about this part. I already knew about that part of ranked choice voting. I love it. But now comes this thing from fairvote.org called the Fair Representation Act, because there's another problem that we've got in addition to our winner-take-all districts, right? That's the problem. The math of this, you know, if people talk about third parties. We need to support the Green Party, support the Libertarian Party. Do it all you like. But the math says there will be two main parties. Doesn't matter what they're called. Right now, they're Democratic and Republican. You can pretend that you could build Green to be the one that takes over Democrat. Maybe that happens, but not likely. You're likely to be stuck in this duopoly like we've been for decades and decades. And another part that exacerbates that has been gerrymandering, has been the Republicans winning these state houses and then, after the decennial census, writing up these districts and cramming all the Democratic voters into one district. So, like, you might have a state that's 50-50 Democrat-Republican, but if we can cram all 50% of them Democrats into one district and have three other Republican districts, they're not as populous, but they're Republican dominated, we get to send three reps and one Democrat to the Congress, even though our state's a 50-50 state. So that's been a problem with this gerrymandering and the winner-take-all single-member district. So here is the plan. The plan under the Fair Representation Act is that the districts would become larger, and each district would elect 3, 4, or 5 winners. Now think about that, right? Now, a state like Idaho or Alaska, this isn't going to work because there's only one representative. But if you take a state like California, there's 53 representatives. Imagine in California, if instead of there being, they're 53 or 56. I think there's 56 now. Imagine if there's, instead of 56 separate one-member districts in California, there were 11 5-member districts and one with 6. Or whatever numbers we need to make that work. 12 districts, 2 with 3, the rest with 5, something like that, right? But imagine that your district now is voting for 5 representatives to send to Congress. The chances that one big district is going to elect people out of those five that more closely match the demographics of that district are much better than a tiny district that can be gerrymandered to pick just one Republican. It's going to be real hard to gerrymander a district for it to produce five Republicans when you get 10, 12 people to vote for. Also, this fair representation thing would give Green parties and Libertarian parties a chance, along with the ranked voting, because the ranked voting takes away the spoiler effect. But if you're electing five congressmen from a California district and you've got, you know, one area of town that's strongly Green Party, like a, I don't know, a Marin County or something, they could actually get one of their Green people into Congress. But the idea of trying to find one congressional district where a single winner would be a Green or a Libertarian, not likely to happen. So this is an amazing development. I love this Fair Representation Act. It's House Bill 3057. And it's completely constitutionally legal, because, you know, people like, well, it violates one man, one vote, etc. No, there's no constitutional problem this whatsoever. The Constitution does not say how the states elect their members of House of Representatives. And there's been a lot of different ways we've done it over the country's 241-year history. But since about 1970, all of our districts have been one winner, winner take all, and we've seen what's happened to our House. We've seen what's happened to our Congress since 1970. I would say 1970 is about where you can point to America becoming more of an oligopoly, more of a kind of a corporate power. So I encourage people to check out fairvote.org, because it's a great resource for how we can actually do some of these innovative ways, how we can achieve these innovations in our electoral system that would actually benefit the people. Fairvote.org is the place to look for. And they give you all sorts of information on the polarization of voting, gerrymandering, unfair representation, how the primaries are messed up. I think sometimes that people lose track of the problem that it's not the players sometimes as much as it is the game. You met that last segment, I went off on Bill Clinton, went off on the centrists, but how much of that was them just figuring that's the only way they can win the game? Have we gotten to a place where our politics are so broken, where things are so partisan, so polarized on a partisan basis, and so dependent on huge amounts of money that leftward politics are impossible to execute? Like, they're good in design, but we can't execute them? I don't think that's true. I think Bernie Sanders showed you can raise a ton of money on the internet, $27 at a time, from a lot of people, if you really believe in the people and you really stand up for them. That's where I think the DNC, Mark Rich type Democrats have made the mistake, is not trusting in the people, not recognizing that if you motivate, if you inspire the people, that a whole bunch of little donations are far better than a few big ones. Obama started that trend with his campaigning. Obama just gave us a taste. You know, when he was campaigning in 2007, it was hope and change and something different. And, you know, he got into office and we got a lot of the same. Now, I think Obama did a masterful job, given what he inherited, given the devastation of the economy that he inherited, the war on terror that he inherited from George W. Bush. I think at being faced with the social obstacle of being the Jackie Robinson of the Oval Office was also, you know, we can't understate how much that affected his presidency, especially in the unprecedented obstinance of the Republican Party dedicated to making sure he failed. I mean, I think that's the first time I remember in my political life where the opposition party wasn't just in disagreement with the president, but they actively wanted him to fail. They actively wanted him to crash and burn. They obstructed everything he did. Everything. Even stuff that was Republican ideas, Republican policies, that had they been offered by anyone else, I think they'd have followed along with them. But no, because it was the black guy, had to be opposed. It's funny. Larry Wilmore had his show on Comedy Central, and his bit about the 2016 election was called The Unblackening, right? And now it's like we're living in the unblackening. Like they are literally trying to erase all evidence of President Obama's achievements, accomplishments, anything. It has to be undone. I mean, this whole thing about healthcare, we have to repeal and replace. We have to repeal and replace Obamacare. Who out there is complaining? Who out there's got the problem that is saying, boy, we really need to be kicked off our healthcare again? Boy, we really need to go back to not being able to cover pre-existing conditions again. Boy, I'd really like it if my college-age kid living in the basement wasn't on my insurance anymore. Who's calling for that? The only failures that we've had in Obamacare, the only problems we've had with healthcare have been due to Republicans purposefully trying to make it fail. That reminds me what the other Dan Savage point was about framing. The Republicans, when they come up with a bill, they call it the Patriot Act. Why, how could you be against the Patriot? Are you not a patriot? Do you hate patriots? Are you against patriotism? Right? Their framing is all about selling it. Sell it. What did Obamacare get? The Affordable Care, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And they're still doing it now when they talk about we need to fight for single payer. We need to fight for single payer health care. Now, policy wise, they're right. We need a policy where the government is a single payer into a health care system that covers everyone. The problem is, from a framing position, single payer sounds like you will be paying. You, the single person, will be paying. You will be paying the taxes for someone else to get health care they don't deserve because you, the single payer, paid for it. Call it what it is, man. Call it universal health care. Or call it Medicare for all. People love Medicare. They love the idea of that. Medicare for all or universal health care. But no, Democrats can't buy a framing message when it's right in front of them. I mean, them not having George Lakoff scripting everything they do and getting everyone on board to a strong messaging platform is one of the many downfalls of what should be the dominant party in this country. You look at the polls of what people like, what policies people want to see enacted, what regulations people want, and they're almost line for line the Democratic Party platform. But Democrats don't know how to sell it. They don't know how to show how America is great because we care for each other and we invest in one another.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey, everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Did you know that in the U.S., black women have the highest HIV infection rates of all women? As a public health professional, I know we can do better. Every day, I work to close the gap in health inequities, but I'm just one person. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
You're not high. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's not recreational. It can be destructive, and it consistently is destructive.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every Friday for the Reefer Rock Review with Herb Thrasher from 420radio.org. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Most
of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, let's end the day and the week with some local marijuana news. Right here from the state of Oregon, where House Bill 2198 is heading to the desk of Governor Kate Brown, expected to be signed. This will do two major things. The first one is it will finally create the Oregon Cannabis Commission. You know, our adult cannabis market is under the control of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, right? So we're finally going to get our own commission. Yay! We finally have the Oregon Cannabis Commission. And the big development, the one that everyone's really excited about here, is that the OMMP growers, the medical marijuana growers, under this bill will be allowed to sell up to 20 pounds a year into the regulated adult use market. Now, this has been kind of controversial because the way things started is we had dispensaries, first illegitimate dispensaries, and medical growers took their excess cannabis and the above what the patient needed and took the excess and sold it to these illegitimate dispensaries. Then by 2013, we got a dispensary bill that passed and set up legit dispensaries. And it was the same kind of deal. We had medical, this cadre of medical marijuana growers who were selling marijuana to these dispensaries. But then the adult use market kicks in 2015 and they start licensing adult use and licensing recreational grows. And well, we didn't want the two systems merged here. We didn't want the medical grower. We didn't want growers taking advantage of the medical program to skirt the regulations and the taxation and the oversight that the recreational growers have to go through. But on the other hand, we didn't want to make it so the medical growers couldn't sell their excess somewhere. And what's happened is since a lot of these dispensaries have gone from being medical only to being both recreational and medical, they're getting a lot of their inventory now through the recreational growers who can grow at much greater scale and so forth, right? So being able to sell 20 pounds, it's not enough for some of these growers. They could have a much higher limit, but it's better than zero. And we are talking about crossing the stream, so to speak. We're crossing over, taking cannabis plants that are owned by patients, medicine from those plants that's being grown for treating their medical conditions. And after we've given enough of that to them, the excess, up to 20 pounds of it, can then be diverted over into the recreational market. In competition with growers who are recreational growers who have spent license money and inspection money and all that, fees and such, they get to compete 20 pounds at a time with them per year. Now, I don't know if that's enough competition to really freak out the large scale growers who are selling 20 pounds, at one shop in a day. But at least give some of these medical growers some way to make up some costs, some way to make up some money for the time and the effort that they put into growing this cannabis for the patients. And considering that I am now one of these medical marijuana growers, I'm kind of happy about it. I'm like, yay, I can have another income stream. That'll be fun. So that's the House Bill 2198. There's a write-up for it by our friend Anthony Johnson, the chief proponent of our adult use legalization initiative. You can find it at Weed News. It's up on the main page of Weed News at weednews.co. Check that out. There's also a story about a vape pen bust happened in Indiana. They got 30,000 vape pen cartridges on the highway in Indiana. The recreational market, the underground market is starting to adapt. And the underground market now wants oil. It's a lot easier to conceal. It's a lot easier to transport. It's the same exact thing that happened under alcohol prohibition. You could make more off the whiskey in the trunk than you could the beer.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
All right, folks, well, that's all the time we got for this week. Time flies when you legalize. Thanks for joining us here every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific on live.mjagenda.com. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.